Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cask, the cask strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 43 for June 4th, 2006. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll look at the alternative to official distillery bottlings. Sometimes independent bottlers are the only way to get a single malt from a distillery that sends all of its whiskey to the blenders.
Our biggest worry is we'll probably all be closed down in a few years because the big whiskey companies are no longer selling us whiskey. They keep it all to themselves, so we're finished. We're dead and buried. Nah, we'll never be dead and buried.
That's Ewan Shand of Duncan Taylor & Company. His Rarest of the Rare line features single malts from distilleries that aren't just mothballed, but have been demolished. First, let's look at the news. Earlier this year, we talked with Ken Story, the owner of the legendary Pot Still Bar in Glasgow, and the winner of this year's Whiskey Magazine Award as the world's best whiskey bar. Ken is willing to put his liquor license at stake for a principle. He plans to ignore the Glasgow Licensing Board's new rule banning bars from serving liquor in real glasses. The new law takes effect in January. It was designed to keep glasses and bottles out of the hands of drunken hooligans. But Story doesn't see any of those rowdies in the pot still. He sees the law as a blow to tourism and told The Observer in Sunday's editions that he'll keep serving his drams in Glencairn Crystal. Bar and pub owners in Glasgow have filed a legal challenge to the new law. Also on the legal front, Pernod Ricard's Chivas Brothers unit is taking a Chinese newspaper to court. The International Finance News published an article recently claiming Chivas deceives Chinese consumers by selling younger, inferior whiskeys as 12-year-old Chivas Regal in China. Chivas spokesmen say that's a lie and want the paper to apologize. The paper's publishers are countersuing Chivas for defamation. And there's another crack in the whiskey industry's glass ceiling. For the first time, a woman has been named to the board of the Malt Distillers Association of Scotland. 23-year-old Polly MacDonald is the production manager at Tomaton Distillery in Invernessshire. On the events calendar, tickets are now on sale for what may be the longest trip many whiskey lovers could take. Whiskey Live South Africa will be held in November, and Marsh Middleton has just launched the website for ticket sales and information.
In November, we'll have two sessions. One will be in Cape Town, like always, and one will be in Johannesburg, all these big convention centers. It's the whiskeylifefestival.co.za. You can go in there for news, etc. There'll be linked to this whiskey cast as well, obviously. We do more South African-based reviews, you know, what brands are available in South Africa, etc. So we're looking forward to some really good forums and interaction on our site.
You'll find a link to the Whiskey Live South Africa site on the WhiskeyCast website, along with a list of other upcoming events, as well as a link to email me your questions and comments. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Many distilleries never produce a single malt for whiskey lovers, since their entire production goes straight to the blenders, at least most of the time. And until the Macallan introduced its fine oak range a year or two ago, the only way to find out what a Macallan aged in ex-bourbon casks was like was to find an independent bottling. The independents buy their casks on the open market and hope their limited edition bottlings will do well on the consumer market. For example, Duncan Taylor's Rarest of the Rare.
Rarest of the Rare is reasonably new. We've had it for about 2 years, and it's all whiskies from distilleries that no longer exist. And it's clearly defined as no longer exist. We can't have a distillery that still stands there. It's got to be something that's been flattened, turned into a car park or an apartment. It'll never distill again. So the Rarest of the Rare range is pretty rare stuff.
Give me some examples.
Oh, Glenugie, Glenurie, Banff. That's three in my neighbourhood. Kinclaith. Oh, you name it.
And there's too many of those to really even think about.
I mean, the big companies, you know, Commerce. Big companies buying up little companies, the usual thing. They close them down despite the fact that they're probably better distilleries than they've got at the moment anyway.
Ewan Shand of Duncan Taylor & Company also takes his rare casks and produces limited edition blends to go along with his line of single malts, including a new 38-year-old blend introduced this spring at Whiskey Live New York.
We're sort of pioneering a lot of things, so trying new things, and independent market is very good. We're very happy, but our biggest worry is we'll probably all be closed down in a few years because the big whiskey companies are no longer selling us whiskey. They keep it all to themselves, so we're finished. We're dead and buried. Nah, we'll never be dead and buried.
saying that with a big smile on your face, but is that a realistic possibility someday?
We're just going to keep going, and hopefully they'll notice that we produce fantastic spirits. We don't do silly prices. That we are, you know, we offer something that that they offer, and in most cases better. So I think they'll stick by us. We've got good friends in the industry.
Lorne McKillop takes a different tack with his McKillop's Choice selections. Each one is a single cask bottling.
It's really my tasting and choosing of single casks that are, I think, above and beyond the standard distillery bottling. When you're buying a distillery bottling of whiskey, you're buying maybe 100 casks put together in one go, so you're buying an average every time. My job is to taste small 200ml samples every day, and I reject 80% as not being good enough for McKillop's Choice. And I'm only interested in the very top barrels, of the pinnacles, not the averages. So therefore, these are my selections of what I would consider to be the best barrels available from each distillery. I am, by training, a master of wine, and use my training of many years in selecting wines to select whiskies. And I think very much it is the very fine wine end of the whiskey business.
How hard is it to make the difference, or to make the switch over between wine and whiskey taste?
I think once you have a training, it's rather like riding a bicycle. You tend not to fall off too often. Once you've learned how to do it, it's almost instinctive. Certainly, I've had to perhaps adjust my technique slightly, and certainly I don't try and drink at cask strength. I always bring down with water, down to more realistic strengths. I certainly smell at cask strength, and then break down with water to about 30% before it touches my palate. So,
what, in your opinion, makes a good single malt?
Well, rather like when you buy a good wine, you wouldn't want a wine that's all tannin and no acidity and no fruit in it. So you look for balance, and that's exactly what I look for. I look for a whiskey that's harmonious, elegant, balanced, typical of the region and of the distillery, and also has an element of quality above and beyond that normally seen.
Now, the $6 million question everybody asks an independent bottler: how do you get your casks?
Buy them, is a short answer to that one. I taste cask samples. I get offered parcels of whiskey almost on a daily basis. I always ask for a sample. I pay £10, which is $17 for each sample, and I'd rather waste $17 not to have a cask in my inventory that I'm not happy with. So therefore, it is purely by cask selection.
Now, how do the distilleries feel about this? Because I know in some cases there are some distilleries that don't like you, or don't like independents using their name on the bottle. How do you square that?
In short, I don't ask them. I just get on with it and do it. I have had one instance where a distillery has, who I'm very friendly with, and in fact they're here today, and they asked me not to, and so I didn't. So if a distillery makes a point of asking me not to bottle a whiskey, then I won't, but because we will have to be friendly in the industry. But by and large, none of them tend to mind too much.
Malt Advocate magazine publisher John Hansel thinks highly of McKillop's Choices.
His whiskeys generally are very balanced, subtly complex, type of whiskeys that they don't slap you in the face. It's kind of like if it was a woman and you were dating her, it would take a few dates to get to know her. You know, it's not a one-night stand kind of thing. It's more like you need to date the whiskey, have a whiskey a few times to really get to know the whiskey, because they're very subtle.
However, Hansel's not as positive about all independent bottlings.
Think of whiskey as a singer, and you know, if you're a solo artist, you better be really good. If you're in a choir, you know, if you don't hit all the high notes, someone else will for you. So if you're doing a bottling of a single cask, it can be a great thing if it's a stellar cask. But if it has flaws, it's going to show up right away. And a lot of the independent bottlers' whiskeys can be that, have the potential of being that way. I think it comes down to who picks the casks. Some of them are outstanding, but some of them aren't.
Is it important to know who's picking the cask, or brands that, for instance, depends on who it's picking it? I don't want to name names or anything, but if you know who's behind the independent bottling and you know they've got a good reputation, the odds are it's going to be a better one?
Without a doubt. I mean, I'll actually give you an example. I mean, as far as a house style, there's a lot of great independent bottlers. I told you at the tastings night, we talked about, I'll give you two examples, Jim McEwen, who's picking out the Murray McDavid Mission whiskeys. The guy has a fantastic palate, nose, and almost, you know, usually the Murray McDavid Mission whiskeys are really great whiskeys. And as far as house style, you know, you look at the McKillop's Choice whiskeys with Lorne McKillop. Every independent bottler has their own way that they get their whiskeys. Some have house characters, some of them don't. Like a lot of, for over the years, not as much now, but at one time, a lot of the Gordon McPhail whiskeys were sherried in ace and sherry barrels, which was a great thing because a lot of whiskeys you would only get normally from a bourbon cask, like Kalila, for example, you could get in the sherry cask, which was always a nice change of pace. So you just have to be aware of what's going on. Be an educated whiskey drinker.
Independent bottlings also exist in the bourbon world, though they're harder to pin down details for. While some distilleries have been known to sell casks to independents, they usually come with contract language banning the bottler from disclosing where the whiskey was actually produced. That's all for this edition of WhiskeyCast. As always, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And if you like the show, please tell your friends and consider leaving feedback at the WhiskeyCast page in the iTunes Music Store or on your favorite podcast site. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2006, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.